Please be seated. As I read the text from Luke's gospel appointed by the lectionary for this day, the phrases that Jesus is telling us as we gather on the plain listening for profound wisdom makes me uncomfortable. Love your enemies and do good to those who curse you and pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. That doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like the strong and self-confident person that my parents raised me to be, or sound like anything that I'd want for my own children. And we read about Jacob's children in the Hebrew scriptures in Genesis this morning. Brothers who betray, and a brother who not only forgives, but insists it was part of God's larger plan for their survival, out of God's great love for them. It just seems so unfair, I guess, is the word that would come to mind. Unjust, maybe, unequal. And yet Jesus stands before us on the plain, engaging our understanding on this level ground about a way of being in relationship with one another that seems drastically counterculture, creating more drama than any movie we'll see nominated tonight at the Oscars. It wouldn't be a sermon if I didn't mention the Oscars. I love the Oscars. If the AGMs are considered a special day in the life of a parish, popular culture dictates that tonight is a very special evening in the life of movies. Now, I've mentioned before, I even went to a movie last night. on a Saturday night. But I've mentioned before that I'm a huge fan of the Oscars. I love the stories of cinema and how they invite us to think and experience outside the realities that are commonly our own. Now, one of the best movies I've seen that is nominated this year for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture, is the movie Roma. Have any of you seen it yet? I know you've seen it. It's nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture. You have to see it. It's a movie about systems of privilege and oppression. And it vividly came to mind as I read the text from Luke this week. Because if we read Jesus' words in Luke about the kind of vulnerability and humility it would take to offer the other cheek to a striker, not with resilience, but with mercy, through our own context, it would seem maybe abusive, like something integral would be taken from us. But to hear Jesus' words about how to mercifully love through the lens of this particular movie, set in a socioeconomic reality that is vastly different to our own, it's a bit eye-opening. Now, without spoiling the movie for those of you who haven't already seen it, it's about a young live-in maid named Cleo, who, like many people from her indigenous background, has left her own family in the impoverished countryside for a better life in the city. Cleo works for a family of seven in the Roma neighborhood of Mexico City. Now, this is where the writer-director of the film, Alfonso Cuarón, grew up, and the movie takes place around 1970. Now, Cleo is a powerless person who is subject to the socioeconomic forces far beyond her control. Nonetheless, her life as a maid is a vast improvement thanks to good money for reasonable work in a loving family. She, as the protagonist, is deeply uncomfortable to relate to as I watch the story unfold through the lens of my own privilege. She loves the children she cares for more than her own. She is loyal and methodical, sacrificial and hopeful. You can see how she goes about her daily duties of her life with a mundane commitment to routine. School drop-off and pick-up, cleaning up the dog poop, washing dishes, doing laundry. She brings to life a sense of the sacred ordinary, where God is found in the pots and pans, and the slow, unexpected, unexceptional events of her life and the plot to the movie. But what is exceptional about Cleo is that Cleo loves. One looks at this movie and would be repulsed to live the kind of life that Cleo is able to love through. She is exploited by a system that keeps her in a place at the bottom of the social structure, in servitude, in poverty, without the freedoms that the children she is paid to look after have automatically by their birth. She seems almost unexceptionally heroic in the ways that she is able to live, in a way that expects kindness, that expects forgiveness, that expects reconciliation and expects mercy, despite her lack of the simple freedoms that we would take for granted. Simple freedoms that keep us relatively in control of our lives and our futures. She lives oppressed, but somehow she is free to love and to receive love from those who, by their virtue of place and privilege in their society and their system of 1970s Mexico City, but they participate in her harm as they love her. Now, it's as complicated a story as Jesus's, who in Luke's gospel so far has clashed with the Pharisees and other religious peoples for bringing into focus God's movement in their midst in a new and life-giving way. As Jesus begins to teach in his ministry, he begins with a lesson of mercy for the sake of our complicated relationships with each other and with God. Jesus' message of mercy is challenging for us to hear in this day and time, where there remains much inequality in the world, where there remains much discord and division in our own communities, maybe in our families, and even in the church of Jesus' own teaching. But as we hear Jesus' call to turn the other cheek, to forego dreams of revenge, to give more than is required of us, to go the extra mile, to give to all who beg, to lend without limits, love the enemy, pray for persecutors, and be merciful, just as God is merciful. It sounds just as impossible today as perhaps it did to those hearing it on the plane. It is as foreign to me as Cleo's response of love in the face of oppression. For those of us with privilege, it could sound a lot like letting go of ego, or maybe reframing any sense of threat that challenges our sense of self. We do not need to believe that if somebody gets you, then you get them back or perish. We don't need to believe that it means that at all costs we cannot die, because after all, it is through death into a new life of Christ that God has called us. Are Jesus' words of resisting harm to others and ourselves really so difficult for us to understand? Well, I'd say so, and maybe even go as far as to say they're a little offensive. Pray for the very people that wish us harm? Come on, Jesus, I can't do that. Not all the time. I mean, I can and have resisted anger. I have shown kindness to people who have shown me the opposite. We know that these actions are possible, but we also know that whatever efforts towards peacekeeping that we've made in the past, there have always also been incidents of the exact opposite. And we're not alone here, because God knows quite well that we are human. Human beings make up the systems of the world, whether it is the neighborhood, the church, the country, the global community. Wherever there are humans, there is going to be discord and sometimes conflict. And if we live with the notion that in order to live means that at all costs we cannot die, then we will shift and keep our focus on our own survival, our own needs, and our own self. Now, this is the very nature of sin, to be inward looking, to be curved in on ourselves so that so much that our gaze turns away from God and away from others and rests firmly on our own sense of ourself and our survival. Now, we humans do this. We do it all the time, as individuals, as families. It's the human condition. We do it as church bodies trying to stay alive and relevant, as society choosing our own first world economic comfort over the survival of the third world or indigenous lives, both here and other places around the globe, as opportunistic consumers grabbing what we can have now at the expense of the health of the planet. Now, why do we keep doing this? What exactly are we afraid of? What or who could possibly threaten to take from us all that God has already deemed sufficient for all of our needs and secured it for us? Let us hear the psalmist today. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret over those who prosper in their way, over those who carry out evil devices. God turns us constantly because God loves us always. Turns us from our sin because we sure can't manage to get it right all the time. We're gonna need a lot of help with this be merciful to one another command. Being around other humans is way too hard, and it doesn't help that we are way too human. And this is where God, who is God, meets us, who is not God, in our failure and in our weakness and in our vulnerabilities, knowing that we are fully human, claiming us in the waters of our baptism, feeding us with God's divine presence at the table and forgiving us. We die with Christ to our ways of looking inward, and we're raised with Christ to a new way of being that cannot be unseen as we live into our wholeness through God's mercy for us and for each other by dying to our sin. As theologian and scholar David Lowe puts it, this doesn't forget or even minimize the presence of sin in us or the world, but neither does it assume that God is limited by our sin. Rather, it takes seriously that we are always being called by Jesus to be more than we thought we could and invited to claim our identity as God's chosen and beloved people as we live in the world. Jesus' message here, returning hate with love, turning the other cheek, praying for those who stand against us, is incredibly countercultural. I mean, it will not win you an election, but it may help change the world for the better. Change, not save. Because again, that is Jesus' job. And because Jesus has promised to do that, we're free. We're free to take care of the little corner that we live in, practicing to live like Jesus' disciples. Throughout the week, and then returning to church each Sunday to be reminded of Jesus' grace and forgiveness, and to be sent out once more to live as part of Jesus' kingdom. Now, Martin Luther once said that the Christian life is not about arriving, but always about becoming. We can think about that here at St. Mary's. It isn't about arriving, it's about us becoming. And St. Augustine said about the Lord's Supper, that it would invite people to receive who you are. When you come to the table today, receive who you are, and then go and become what you have received. So, people of St. Mary's, on this day that we gather to reflect on how God has been here in our midst over the last year, and as we stand together in God's mercy and grace towards the community and beyond, let us be nourished here on this plain by the words of Jesus and his call for us to live into God's merciful love for everyone. Not in ways confined by any need to preserve ourselves, but with a confidence in God's kingdom, on earth as it is in heaven, knowing that in God, through Jesus, humanity is connected in a divine way, and we are the hands and feet of that divine way right here in Machozen. Maybe this is what Jesus meant by a call to a quiet and non-cooperation with harm in the sacred, ordinary moments of our daily lives in all of its forms. Choosing love again and again. At the foot of the cross, we are all beggars. We are all on equal plane. On our knees, hands outstretched for grace and mercy that God will never withhold. May we continue to gather here at St. Mary's of the Incarnation Church in Machozen to receive who we are and to go and become what we have received for many, many, many more years to come, for the sake of God's love for this world. Amen.